Thank you for joining us today. I'm your host, Tracy Bennett. In studio with me are certified financial planners, Tyler Cook and Tony Payne. And today we're talking about the smart planning meets real life, specifically how taxes touch everything and what you can do about it. Sometimes it can feel like you don't have a whole lot of control. So we're going to get into it. Taxes and beyond, the foundation of your wealth strategy, technically, so that I can prepare you for the conversation. So getting right into it, because this is a conversation that we hear a lot about at work, at the office, and from an every person's point of view, this is a scary subject. I mean, especially the more you have, the more you've amassed, the more careful you have to be, as far as your taxation is concerned. So what can somebody do today? I just want to kind of get into it. And maybe kind of backtrack. If you are comfortable giving an overview of what taxation looks like for the average person, what it means to somebody, maybe in one or two sentences.
Yeah, it's the only two things that are certain, right? Death and taxes. We've mm-hmm. heard that before. Mm-hmm. So you got to pay your taxes. Otherwise, you're going to have some issues. Now, what we like to tell people is your tax bill is negotiable. And exactly, that's the reaction we get when we first say that. Like, what do you mean? Well, you have to do what the IRS says. Of course you do. But there's a lot of opportunities throughout the calendar year to actually negotiate or manage your tax bill based upon what you're doing. Charitable giving, for example, if you're a business owner.
So you're speaking figuratively.
No, it's serious. I mean, it's literal. Your tax bill
is
negotiable.
But I mean, you're the one controlling it is what you're saying.
Yeah, and you see that a lot with what you want to do. Often it requires you to give something up, of course, mm-hmm. whether it's a business and you have to spend money on an expense. That would reduce your tax bill, of course, because your income is lower. Mm-hmm. Or if it's something like you're charitably inclined to give to, organization, perhaps there's a deduction that you get at the end of the day. So you're in control of it. But what we see often is people will overlook that piece and just focus on April. It's time to file. What did I do last year? And oftentimes that's too late to really be proactive.
That's me. Yeah. Yeah.
Well, better not be you anymore.
Well, I mean, I'm it's not that I'm not listening, but I just don't know that there's a whole lot of wiggle room in my situation. Well, no, we won't go there, but
that's what part of our job is to uncover some of those things.
And maybe a basic example to go back to the beginning too, when we talk about it's negotiable, like you said, Tyler, I mean, if you owned a stock, just a basic idea here, and the stock had a gain in it, it's your choice whether or not you want to sell it or not. So if you chose to sell it and you had a gain in it, you incurred a capital gain. So if you choose to sell it, that's you negotiating your tax bill to be a little higher. Mm-hmm. Now, yes, you get the proceeds, you get the gain, you get to have that cash money, but you incurred a higher tax bill. Mm-hmm. So you might choose to sell something at a loss, and then you've offset that tax bill. There you go. You've negotiated your tax bill. Mm-hmm. Now, if you sold something that had the same loss as the amount of that gain, in theory, you've said, hey, I've negotiated that tax bill. I've offset it. It's zero. There you go. You've negotiated your tax bill pretty well.
Yep.
You make that sound very easy.
Sometimes it is.
Well, that's part of the proactive planning is we focus on tax planning at the beginning of the year mm-hmm. and the end of the year with our quarterly subjects. But the reality is it's talked about throughout the year, especially with business owners. There's so many opportunities there. And just to Tony's point about tax laws and what you have to pay attention to, we're coming up next year with another tax change. And so it's trying to stay ahead of that, or at least aware of what's there. That's part of the proactive piece, because it might be some things to do later this year that you won't be able to do next year. Mm-hmm. And that's happened over in the course of history. I remember years ago, people would rush down to prepay their property tax bill. And if anybody remembers that, this is almost 10 years ago now, but that was because they were going to change some deductions on the back end. And so you had to take advantage of it now instead of waiting until April. So when we say negotiable, that's what we mean. It's not anything that's outside of what the IRS would want you to do. It's just what you have the power to control.
And I should first say, we're not CPAs, our firm. We are not tax accountants. But this is some part of comprehensive planning is taxation planning.
And what I would hope to do, too, is give enough of the concepts and talk about enough of the things we want to, again, concepts, really, that you know enough to ask your accountant, ask your CPA, ask your tax advisor about it, that, hey, maybe this is a concept I could incorporate or something that I know enough that, yeah, I could ask this question and now I can do something about it because I heard enough that, yeah, I could, that affects me.
Yeah.
And that's just enough to start with.
That's the one thing I did correctly is built a good relationship with a CPA. So, start building your team, right? Start early. What can somebody do today to free up thousands in cash flow without changing their lifestyle?
I think you just said it first. Build a great relationship with that accountant and build a team, because you don't know exactly what scenario it will be. You know, is it a bonus at work? Is it an inheritance? Do you have to take a required minimum distribution? And maybe you forgot about it and there was an old penalty, or maybe there was something that you sold that you forgot to pay the taxes on or should have. You know, there's so many scenarios that are going to be specific to you and might come up at a busy time of your life when you were sick or a family member was sick. And you know what? You needed that professional advice.
Good points.
It's good to go further with that for a second. So two scenarios. Use the bonus one you mentioned earlier. And Tracy, to your question about saving thousands, if you're disciplined enough to not spend the bonus and you have access to something like a 401k or so forth, maybe increase your withholding so that more goes into that 401k. Because what do you do by doing that? If you put it on a pre-tax basis, you're going to negotiate your tax bill again, reducing the taxes paid. And that could be by thousands of dollars, depending upon how much you save. On the back end, use the RMD scenario. Required minimum distributions, right? Currently at age 73, you're required to take a minimum distribution. Now that's set to exchange or to increase in the future at age 75, but sitting here today, it's 73. The point being is the IRS now allows you to donate money directly from your IRA to charity. And if you did it the old way, where maybe you're sitting there writing checks every week and handing it to the church or wherever it is, whatever you're doing, there might be a better way to give and a more tax efficient way to give. And that's how we, again, proactively manage to be wealthy by saving thousands of dollars with using those techniques. So that's a huge one to look at. But that, again, if you're just doing it kind of stuck in your ways and not willing to open and look at the bigger picture, then you're probably leaving a lot on the table.
And I'll let our accounting friends out there correct me on this one, but there's something as silly as this one. And that technique you just described, Tyler, if you were going to give from an IRA and you were going to use that qualified charitable distribution tool and you wanted to use that in December, and you'd already taken $10,000 out, and that was your required minimum distribution. And you'd already distributed that. You went to the beach. You had a great time. And then you wanted to give to charity at the end of the year, and you'd already satisfied your RMD. Well, then that QCD, that qualified charitable distribution, well, that's going to be on top of your RMD. But if you did it in January before that trip to the beach, well, now you've satisfied your RMD. That is now satisfied that QCD. You've hit the mark. And only because you did it in January instead of December did you get the benefit. So it's the same $10,000. It's the same maneuvering, but it's at a different time of the year versus taking it out at the end of the year. So the only difference was the timeline. You took the same amount of money out, but it's the timing of it. Mm-hmm. So even something like that, having the right advice, taking it in the right order, that can be impactful on your taxes.
Strategery.
That's sure one of my favorite words.
What about using debt as a strategic, I've got strategery on the brain, debt as a strategic lever? So if mortgages or business debt is working for somebody or against them at a tax time, so how do they use debt as a strategic lever?
Yeah, there's different ways. There's good debts and there's bad debts. Start on the business side of that too. On the business side, debt can leverage used properly can be a very good thing. Look at real estate, for example. If you do it correctly with real estate and use your loans correctly with mortgages, that can actually increase the cash on cash returns that you see from those types of investments. So when used correctly, it can be a great tool to use. We see scenarios too where that is the case, but also the other side where people are getting exposed to too large of projects because that the bank just told them, hey, you know what, you're eligible for this amount, take it. Specifically with the real estate piece, people can be over leveraged and that can be a problem. Now, I think we've kind of been lulled to sleep recently with real estate and the volatility there, certainly the last, I'd say, 15 years almost, you know, since 2008, 17 years now, geez. So the idea there is we really haven't seen a volatile real estate market since 2008, 2009. And so a lot of people that get into that game,
maybe you have been aging, my friend. That's 7 years. Right. Sorry. Not 17.
2008, 17.
Oh, sorry. Yeah. I thought you said 17.
I'm here. I got you.
All right, and do I have to separate you two?
So the point being, though, is if you overexpose yourself to those types of investments by using too much debt, then when things go south, now you're really stuck because you have a property that maybe not is worth what you thought it was. Worst case scenario, you could be underwater where the mortgage is higher than, you know, valued higher than the actual property itself. We saw that in 2008. Mm-hmm. So when people had to go sell, they had to bring a check to closing just to get out from the property. So we haven't seen that in a long time. And I think people have ignored that.
Yeah. Knock on wood. This is something I think a lot of people can relate to. If you like to gift to family and friends every year, how can somebody gift $100 million or more during their lifetime without triggering big tax bills?
That's $100 million. Who are we talking about?
Kind of a throwing a number out there. We don't usually throw numbers, but just for fun. All right, we'll take a number. How about 100,000?
Yeah, there's great tactics. You can use the annual gift exclusion. So every year you can gift up to that amount. Currently it's $19,000. That goes up with inflation over time. But you can do that without any reporting requirements. And also kind of a fun fact now is we have the highest federal estate tax exemption we've ever had in history. It's upward of $13 million, I believe, per person. So you could exceed those annual exclusion amounts that the IRS sets. For example, let's say you give $50,000. You just might be required to file some paperwork, but there's no tax actually due. So you can utilize what's called the lifetime exemptions while you're here and see that money go to work, but also not have to worry about actually paying a tax.
Are you going to set me off on a rant again like last show, Tracy, about why are we giving this money again? Are we trying to set somebody up for failure?
You know I like to poke you, so go ahead.
Okay. I mean, I'm going to be curious about why we're giving this money, first of all, but we'll get into the mechanics of the house.
That would be Nunya.
Okay,
right?
All right,
so
fine.
That's probably what somebody would say. Okay. I just want to do it.
All right. And as a good financial planner, I might prime more as to the whys and hows, but okay.
I want to buy my kid a house. How about that?
Okay, and I would ask, how are they going to support it? Are they going to have the money beyond that?
And you know, kids pay the property tax.
Right, exactly. Right? Is it a $100 million house and they won't have the money for the property tax, or is it $1 million house and they're okay.
Yeah, that's good.
I would continue after that.
All right. That's good. I like it. So the tax bills on wealth transfer is kind of off the radar for those of us who are not CFPs. So are there other scenarios to be watchful for when it comes to taxations and gifting?
Outside of what we discussed, it's because the exemptions are so high right now, it's not an issue for a lot of folks. I think going back to what Tony said, when we got started in early 2000s, the federal exemptions were $1 million. And at that point, if your estate was over it, you'd pay, was it 50% back then to the government? Wow. So now that you're at, if you look at a household now, it's $26 million for a married couple. That's significant, right? Mm-hmm. So you'd have to have some significant wealth to have those issues. But there are those folks, and we do see those scenarios. And a lot of times it shifts into other charitable planning techniques. But also if you want to gift to the kids, utilizing the annual gift exclusions, and maybe it is helping with the house or things like that. But what Tony said is very valid. It really enables kids, I think, more than it helps them.
Mm-hmm.
And to try and make sure there's the guardrails there first.
Parenting
before you gift those
money.
Yeah, it's a real thing. And it's a society issue, but it's also, I think going back to schooling, we need to boost what's being taught.
Right. And have parents be receptive to it.
Yeah, correct.
That's the big one.
They can learn it at school, but parents have to reinforce it.
And when we're doing this the right way, then we could really leverage up that $100 million you were talking about and that philanthropy and a foundation and employing the children through it. And they can have a job, they can have values, they can advance themselves and the family legacy and all good things, all great things. Mm-hmm. But it's through that and giving a work ethic and having some values and having a plan and developing it that you can get some really great tax savings and a well thought out plan through it. But it really starts at the beginning with the values and having that goal of what are we doing this for?
Speaking of legacies, let's talk about estate planning. We talk about planning documents. If somebody passed away tomorrow, would their family lose half the estate to taxes automatically?
Only if they're above those exemptions.
Okay.
So, and the issue is typically the second death. So use a married couple as the example. Upon the passing of the first spouse, you can pass an unlimited amount between each other. So there's no tax issues at that point. It's the second death that there could be issues. But again, we're talking federal taxes. There are states that have exemptions as well. Use New York, for example. It's roughly $7 million or so right now is their estate tax exemption. So somebody who's above that, you could have a $10 million estate. So on the federal side, you have no issues. But on the state side with New York, you might.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's why you got to dig into the details with it. And again, to your point earlier, use a attorney to do this correctly.
Mm-hmm.
Because when you get above those levels, complex trust planning comes into play.
Yeah, you just read my mind.
Trust.
Yeah. So we've done shows on that as well.
Yeah.
So if you're interested in that conversation, you can check it out. Insurance and tax, and I'm kind of going through the way that we comprehensively plan with our clients, these topics, I think. So as you're listening, understand that these are overarching topics that are really important to a strong financial plan. Insurance is a tax and risk management tool. You know, is somebody overlooking one of the only ways to pass on wealth tax-free in those areas?
Insurance one is tricky. Part of the process is to analyze, first of all, is it needed? And to your point about the tax.
You're talking life insurance.
Yeah, tax. Yeah, thank you. And the tax side of it would be one of the reasons why you would have life insurance. And there's scenarios we've seen where people literally have life insurance policies just to pay a potential tax bill to the federal government.
Really?
It's the only reason why it's there, so that it doesn't eat into the estate that the kids would inherit.
Okay.
So that's one, use that to kind of shift the risk to the insurance policy instead of your own estate. In order to do that, it's irrevocable, right? So you have to make some decisions that can't be unwound once you do it. But the idea there is to protect the estate, literally have an insurance policy to go pay the government, and the kids or whoever else is going to inherit the money is essentially still whole.
Is that when, and we're not attorneys, but is that specifically when someone has aligned the deed to their house to their child in life, that they have that policy in place, or should everybody have that?
So that's a different estate planning consideration.
I just said, should everybody, the compliance guy over here is having a meltdown. Yeah. So give me a scenario.
The deed question is a separate conversation than the insurance piece. Mm-hmm. That's more about avoiding probate, making sure the money goes where you want it to, or in this case, the property, and avoiding that public process of probate. So it saves time and money in that situation. The complex insurance planning with estate planning is strictly because somebody is above the exemptions.
Okay.
And the idea of life insurance always being tax-free isn't always true. Depending upon how the life insurance is paid for and who's paying for it, you know, if work is paying for it or if your company's paying for it and they're deducting it, it may be taxable when it gets paid through to you. So you want to check if your work is paying for it and it's above $50,000, are they reimbursing you for it? Depending upon how it's taxed, it might be taxable to you when it's paid out. So you really want to check the tax status of that. And on that note, even your disability insurance, depending upon how that's paid, it may be taxable to you. So you really want to make sure that you're paying for that with after-tax dollars, because if there is ever a benefit, it might be possible for it to be paid to you tax-free, but you had to be paying for it with after-tax dollars. So these are things definitely to check with an accountant on. But
my brain just...
The idea, though, of definitely look at your pay stubs, mm-hmm. confirm with HR, but dive in on it, because right now, while you're healthy, before something happens, that's the only time you can really take action on this stuff. And when you're going to get a disability payment, you're going to get less than what you're already earning from work. Mm-hmm. Well, if you're already going to earn less and they're going to take taxes out of it, you're really going to be behind. Mm-hmm. So you want to make sure you're getting as much out of that thing as you can.
Yeah, good advice. Boy, that's complicated.
It is.
It really is complicated. All right, time structuring major purchases. Can a high-income household really save on taxes when buying luxury property or equipment, like a boat?
Can they really save on it?
Can they really save on taxes if you're making a big purchase like that?
If they're doing it for pleasure and they're doing it out of their own free will and they're doing it the right way, I don't think so. I mean, if you're doing it for fun and you're doing it for pleasure, if you're doing, and again, in my mind, if you're doing it the right way, probably not. Now, if there is a true dual use for it, and I know there's some accountants out there and some CPA firms built on this kind of stuff, well, then there probably is, and they can work on that. And that's their podcast. That's their own show. They can talk about that stuff. But the core of it is, when you're doing stuff for your personal enjoyment, your personal stuff, you pay taxes on that stuff. And if you're trying to blur the lines and use stuff for personal use and business, you've got to keep very detailed records on that. Keep it very clean there. And again, separate things out. Don't be so aggressive there. And in my mind, it's usually not worth that kind of stuff of blurring that and being so aggressive there. If your business is doing well and you're doing great there, enjoy your boat on your own. Keep it separate. That's my opinion on it.
Don't tell Jay that. Investment strategies for high earners. So are people making money in the market but losing more than they should in taxes?
That's a great question. Probably are paying more in taxes than they should be, if it's ignored, if it's not a proactive situation. But also to what Tony said earlier, you might actually want to pay the tax now and trigger it earlier in your plan versus later. Mm-hmm. Some of that can be dictated upon what Congress does or doesn't do with tax laws as well. So there's always moving parts to that. But
So in theory, your income would be less in retirement than it is while you're working. So how does that work?
Yeah, that's very much it depends. We see quite a few scenarios where people actually are earning more in retirement.
We should all be so lucky.
Well, it's either pensions plus their, well, a lot of times it's a pension they've got, plus they have saved a bunch in retirement accounts that they didn't have to take distributions from mm-hmm. that required minimum distribution. So when you add those two together, it could exceed what they actually made while they were working.
And add in Social Security yeah. in some cases too, if there isn't a pension, and then you're talking about later in life, some real bucks there too, that, mm-hmm. hey, yeah, that's how you end up earning more, and think about that.
Yeah.
So specifically for high earners, what are some investment tax strategies without getting too deep into the weeds on it?
Yeah, so you want to maximize your tax deferred buckets first. So things like a 401k, maybe if you have a cash balance pension plan, if you're a business owner, profit sharing contributions for 401ks. There's a lot of different tools you could use there, but typically maximize those buckets first with the incentive or the goal of to reduce your tax bill. Now there's limitations, right? You can't get to that money until certain ages.
Mm-hmm.
So that's one consideration. But you know, and if you use high income earners too, charitable giving is one thing we see quite a bit to help reduce the tax bill. And again, the IRS kind of changes the laws on how much of that you can do each year. So paying attention to that is the key. And then I think from the overall tax strategy, making sure you're having the conversation throughout the year is the key to it.
With
CPA, obviously.
With your team.
But also, yeah, that's where we would come in to help facilitate a lot of those conversations and just talk through things. But the overall tax bill being negotiable comes down to the person willing to spend the time and talk about their goals and figure out what makes the most sense. Because what you don't want is it's December, you know, 25th, Christmas, right? And you're sitting there and somebody's trying to do something last minute and you're like, you know, sorry, can't do it. So.
Right.
Be proactive. You just have to continue to work at these things.
Mm-hmm.
And you could also have the same high income earner with maybe a difference of opinion even, where you could do that same strategy where they have a retirement bucket available and maybe it's a Roth 401k and they're in the highest income tax bracket right now. And every dollar they're paying that highest tax on, but they're still younger, they're still going to be earning, and they still want to have that high lifestyle in retirement. So most likely, they're still going to have that high tax bracket in retirement. Both of them are working, both of them are saving. So you know what? We'll still pay that high tax bracket now, put it in the Roth 401k. We may end up with a couple million bucks in there by the time we're retired. It's growing. We're never going to pay taxes on it again. We may not have it subject to a required minimum distribution, and it may never push up our Medicare premiums either. So depending upon what you might need in retirement, the opposite may be true. You might decide, you know what, my account might be chirping in my ear the whole time not to do this Roth thing, but if I listen and I think it through, maybe it's worth it paying taxes now at the highest bracket. So that's where it might even be counterintuitive sometimes.
And that's a great point, too. That's where we come in, because each advisor is kind of in their own lane. So the CPA, the accountant, is focused solely on, you know, what's the lowest tax bill we can get. But to Tony's point, that might not be the best thing for the long run. You might want to pay more tax now to have a tax-free, you know, portion in the background.
I have never heard that in my life. That's
tax bill is negotiable.
Yeah, that's interesting.
That's why we're here, too.
That would not be my inclination, based on what I've been raised to understand about taxes. So that's good to know. So talking about retirement tax planning and benefit coordination, is somebody being set up for a surprise tax hit in retirement? Let's give some scenarios to protect people from that.
The tax bomb, you mean? Mm-hmm. We've heard that a couple times. Yeah. And that's almost that scenario where if you were saving in just one vehicle, maybe a 401k, and you're saving pre-tax and you've done that since you were early in your career, and maybe again, there's a couple million dollars there. And by the time you're 75, your required minimum distributions are several hundred thousand dollars. You're going to be in the highest tax bracket then. You might have Social Security. You might have a pension or something. At that point, every dollar coming out might be subject to that highest tax bracket. That, again, is that tax bomb some people will talk about, where from 75 on, you don't have much tax flexibility at all. And that's where planning ahead, taking advantage of all those years ahead of time, was really valuable while you were working.
Is there ever, for somebody who is in that scenario and it's kind of too late to backtrack, is there ever a solution?
There can be.
Yeah, that's kind of that qualified charitable distribution idea. Other things you can do to offset the tax bomb.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if you can necessarily like fully diffuse it.
But
I think you can
good,
do that.
Yeah.
But you can reduce the impact, right, of doing those things if you plan.
All right. So how does somebody unlock the gates to maximize what they keep?
Maximizing what you keep goes back to the taxes, really, I think. And again, it's really strategizing ahead of time. I mean, it's really neat. We work with a couple different people, and really it goes back to who your employer is as to what, or even your business, what kind of plans do you have available? The tax code drives what kind of goodie baskets are out there. It might be an HSA. It might be an HRA.
What's an HSA?
A health savings account or a health reimbursement account. It might be a 401k, you know, the different kind of retirement accounts or a flexible spending account or a 529, a college savings account. Well, all of those are different accounts targeted for different purposes. And if you're using them rightly, you know, hey, I'm going to use this bucket for that purpose, this bucket for that purpose. Well, that's how you stretch your money a little further. And when you can start to use those codes the right way, and that's that defusing you were talking about, you know, if I can pick and choose where I've saved my money, and if I'm saving it in the right buckets and I use it correspondingly, well, now I'm getting to maximize my dollars. That same dollar where if I took it out and I only got 79 cents out of it, well, if I use it for college or if I use it for healthcare, I'm getting a full dollar out of it. Mm-hmm. Well, not everybody thinks that way. Mm-hmm. You might take the dollar you got from work and only get 79 cents and then use that on college, where that other dollar could have been used there for college. Heck, you might even been able to invest it and get $1.21 for college. That's the kind of stuff we get to do.
Yep.
And what I'm hearing is enlist the experts on these conversations, the CPAs and the CFPs. That's what a universe.
It's fun.
It really is. So retirement benefits, finally, last point, navigating the tax landscape in Social Security and Medicare. So how does somebody manage that without impacting their benefits, you know, to a loss?
So with Social Security, there's that what they call full retirement age where you can get an unreduced benefit. But to your point about sacrificing other parts of your plan, if you retire before, call it 65, so let's use 62 for our example, you might be incentivized to say, let's turn on that Social Security check and let's start getting it, right? That's you've worked your whole life, paid into it the whole time. Now it's time for you to get a cut, right? So that's a real thing to think through, but you might permanently shoot yourself in the foot if you take it too soon. If you're still working in a part-time role or something else generating income, then you get a permanent reduction in your Social Security benefit. So there's a lot of layers to that conversation because Medicare comes involved. What was that look?
Because I didn't know that.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
What you call a reduction is also the idea of it not growing.
Yeah.
So if it's not growing, it's a reduction.
Yeah.
Remember that 8% compounded thing we've talked about in the past?
Mm-hmm. And we're simplifying a little when we say that 8%, but that's the rough math of it. Yeah.
And I think the key there is looking at the bigger picture of your other income sources to make sure that, to Tony's point, if you can maximize the dollar at its full potential and not take the tax hit up front, you're going to be better off. Your money's going to last longer. I think that just creates the peace of mind as well, which is great across the board for your quality of life.
I think the moral of the story is plan smart, seek the counsel of the CFP and the CPA and the attorney, get your team on board. And this is not for the faint at heart to manage on your own, especially I would imagine the more you amass, the more responsibility there is. And boy, you could really shoot yourself in the foot. So put your team together and do your research. Thanks very much, guys. Yeah. Thanks for tuning in. We hope you'll tune in again and check out our YouTube channel. Catch you the next time.
Media. Think big.